Okay, and so our final in-person talk. The last talk will be recorded playback. And now we have Ignaz Forster talking about OpenSUSE MicroS and the technical details. So thanks for coming.
Thanks for the introduction and thanks for joining. As said, this talk will be about OpenSUSE MicroS. We have several topics to cover and not much time, so I'll just go over them quickly. We can't go into too much detail, I fear, but yeah, we'll see. Just one slide back. My name's Ignaz. I'm working for SUSE, and yeah, I'm working as a research engineer. So, what are today's topics? First of all, I'll give you a short introduction on OpenSUSE MicroS itself. How is it built up, and on which foundations is it built up? Then we'll have a short look about the update and rollback mechanisms we are using there, and something we haven't talked a lot about today, on configuration file management, on our approach to handle these in image-based systems. We probably won't make it to the full disk encryption and trusted boot part, but I can just refer to Leonard's talk from earlier today. So, when we are talking about OpenSUSE MicroS, we are basically talking about some product of the whole OpenSUSE universe. As the most known products there are Tumbleweed and Leap. Tumbleweed is our rolling release distribution, and Leap is our stable distribution. Stable not in a sense of Tumbleweed crashes all the time, but stable in a sense of the API doesn't change all the time. Leap itself is based on SUSE Linux Enterprise. SUSE Linux Enterprise, in turn, is based on a Tumbleweed snapshot, which will then merge into a stable product. So when we are talking about MicroS, we still have the same products, basically. We have OpenSUSE MicroS, which is based on Tumbleweed, and we have OpenSUSE Leap Micro, which is based on Leap. So basically, we also have the same ingredients in there. We still have the RPM packages as a base. To be exact, exactly the same packages we have in the Tumbleweed or Leap distributions, and we are building up on these. You may know OpenSUSE as one of the large users of B3FS. With Leap and Tumbleweed, you can use any file system you want. B3FS is just the default, but when we are talking about MicroS, then B3FS will be mandatory. You have to use it because we rely on these features really deeply. First of all, that's snapshot. These are the snapshots. When we are creating a new an update, we will need those snapshots to have the forward and rollback handling. And B3FS has a huge advantage. We've heard that from a previous talk already. B3FS has copy and write functionality, so when we do an update, it will be the smallest update possible, basically. We don't have AP partitioning where we have to have two partitions the same size, but can have a minimal snapshot for that. So when we are talking about MicroS, if it's based on Tumbleweed and Leap, what's the actual difference compared to them? First of all, it's a read-only root file system, which is, I guess, common for all the image-based systems we heard of today. And it contains a minimal package selection. Minimal doesn't necessarily mean that it's the smallest distribution possible, but a minimal package set for what it's trying to do. What it's trying to do is being a single-purpose system. It evolved from a project called OpenSUSE Cubic, which was a Kubernetes distribution, until we discovered that you can use it for so much more. Basically, what it's nowadays is a single-purpose system, including running containers, but you can use it for any system or any use case you actually want to have. We also have a MicroS desktop, so your single use case would be running a desktop there with Flatpaks as packages or for using your applications. That single-purpose system approach also means you can install packages from the Tumbleweed and Leap distributions, but it's not designed to be used that way. But you should use containers for having your actual load, or you can say you install one dedicated package, for example, if you want to run it as a mail server or whatever. And if you have a look at our commercial site, there we have the SUSE Linux Enterprise Micro product, we even have a very limited package set. You can't even install all the packages you can from Tumbleweed and Leap to make that clear that it's really meant to be used in a quite restricted way, for example, for workloads, for example, for cluster nodes or for embedded systems. Especially for embedded systems, we also have another very important point, namely it's a self-maintaining system. So you basically install it and then you, in theory, can forget about it because it will just update and maintain itself. We'll have a short look at that later, how that works. So when we are talking about updates, I said it's a read-only system, so you still have to be able to update the system somehow if it's not image-based. For that, we are basically using the btrfs snapshot functionality, which the btrfs snapshots are snapshots of the root file system. That's the important part. If you have a workload, it's, for example, containers, it's running in var. Of course, you also have etc for your configuration files. But the root file system, basically what's below user, is that part that is actually snapshotted and read-only. So when we have an update, we will just create a new snapshot, the blue square on the second point, and perform the update in there. The blue snapshot is a btrfs snapshot, so it has minimal overhead. It will just be created in microseconds. There's no performance penalty for doing that. And then the update will be performed in that snapshot, for example, by just calling in the OpenSUSE world superdub for doing a system update. If anything should go wrong in that step, then that snapshot can just be discarded again, and we are back at square one. We just have the currently running system and the new snapshot. The active system won't even have seen the new snapshot. If the update was successful, then that snapshot will be marked as the new default snapshot. That means if we reboot the system, just like AB partitioning, that snapshot will be used as the new root file system. We have a second step, but that will be later, just a second. Yeah, let me talk about it immediately. We have a second step at boot called health checker. If health checker should detect that something is not working as expected, for example, a service you expected doesn't come up, then an automatic rollback will be performed again. We are still, we will be back at square one again. And yeah, it behaves as nothing would have been changed and we can wait for the bug fix for whatever broke the actual update. So all the magic happens in an application called Transactional Update and a new library called TUKit. Transactional Update was originally a shell script. It called all the OpenSUSE specifics or SUSE specific stuff, for example, calling super for all the package management, or calling calling mkinitid for rebuilding the initid. Everything which needed write access, so had to modify the root file system, was just wrapped with that wrapper script. Out of that, a new library emerged called libtukit. That one is supposed to be platform agnostic. It includes C, C++, and DBus bindings. And the only implementation currently is for btrfs and snapper. But if you want to, you could also just write another backend, it's prepared for that, for more general snapshot management. We have, for example, a DNF plugin, or a micro DNF plugin to be exact. So you could just use that one library for that. So I just said, if you want to activate that snapshot, you would usually reboot and have that snapshot activated. That's the atomic part, which is important for making sure that you don't touch the currently running system, but make sure the update is activated in one atomic step. With the next transactional update version, there will be also a new option called transactional update apply. What that one does is it will just mount basically user into the currently running system. That was possible if you heard the talk from Ludwig two talks ago. That was possible because of the user merge, because practically everything the system requires is below user. If it isn't, it should be changed in the future. But for MicroS, that one's working very reliably already. If you just update, or if you just installed a new package in the new snapshot, that one will be totally painless because, yeah, you just have the new package available immediately. If you change system services and I don't know what, then maybe you should still think about rebooting afterwards because it's basically the same when yeah, running an update in a running system, basically an update or supered up in a running system. So I talked about rollback already. If you reboot the system and something doesn't work as expected, then it will perform an automatic rollback. Health checker, you can see the URL at the bottom, itself provides an interface basically for custom plugins, so you have to know yourself which services are running on your system, and you have to know yourself how to check them. As said, it's a single-purpose system, so I hope you know what you're doing. And you can just extend it with custom plugins where you define what defines a correctly running system. So let's have a look at the time. Excellent. Let's have a look at the configuration file management. When we are talking about read-only root file systems, we still have to have some directories or files writable. We've just seen that with the Ubuntu Core talk. In contrast to Ubuntu Core, for OpenSUSE MicroS, all of var and all of etc are writable. Var is a separate subvolume. For etc, we are using a mechanism called overlays. It's basically just the kernel overlay FS file system. And that one may need a bit more explanation. So if we have a look at the etcfs tab entry for etc, it looks overly long and overly complicated. But in the end, it's just the two lines which are colored. We have the upper dir, when we are just performing an update, that's the overlay of the next snapshot. The lower dir is the directory of the currently running system, and to avoid having stacks over stacks over stacks, you'll just sync the state of the previous system in, as the base of the new snapshot. So that's the three layers we are talking about. If we have a look at that in detail, what's happening on configuration file changes? If we have the case of file one, that's a really old file. That file has always existed, was never changed. That's no problem at all. Basically, we are just having a look from the top to the bottom. Nothing is in upper dir, nothing is in lower dir 1, so the version of file one, of lower dir 2 will be used. File 2 is interesting because that one has an old state. During the update, that file was actually changed, it seems. Either the package refreshed it or some PostScript modified it or whatever happened to it. In any case, we have a new version of that file. So as soon as you reboot into the new snapshot, you'll see that version of the file. Older snapshots will see that version of the file. I mean, file 4, file 5, and file 6 are similar. Those are quite easy. That one is new in the next snapshot. That one was new in the previous snapshot, and those were modified in the snapshot before. The interesting thing is file 3, because that one exists both in the current snapshot and in the new snapshot, and that may indicate a conflict. Because as soon as you perform an update or create the new snapshot, the state of the file will be frozen, basically, and that one will be used as the base for the new snapshot. If you change the file before rebooting the system, then the new layer won't see that new file anymore. And either you're operating on an old version of the file, or you'd have to check. There will be a warning when you boot the system that there may be a conflict if the file in lower tier 1 is newer than the file in upper tier. That's our approach to handling current systems, current packages, as we have them from vendors, from our own distribution, and having a pragmatic approach to handling those configuration files. But in the end, we don't want to have that at all. In the end, we want to have the files which are packaged to be completely in user. We don't want to have them in etc at all. Only changes that were explicitly done by the admin are supposed to be in etc. That's where we are really approaching. What's our final goal? And for MicroS, for OpenSUSE MicroS, we almost achieved that goal. There are still some problematic files, for example, etcfs type, of course, is such a singular file which you can't extend. If you have an application and also want to make it possible to split those files, we have developed a library called libeconf. You can just embed it and we'll do all the things automatically, just in case you're interested in that. We have made several pull requests and patches for projects which are used by OpenSUSE MicroS to fix those use cases for us. So in the end, I think we took a quite pragmatic approach using existing technologies to just be able to use your existing infrastructure, your existing packages, and preserve the compatibility with all the legacy software which may exist out there. And we are basically doing the opposite of most other distributions by extending the existing distributions to the new use cases. As I feared, I'll just refer to Lennon's talk from earlier today. We do support full disk encryption, we do support trusted boot, and we also have measurement support. So let's better get to the questions part, just in case you have some.
Thank you very much for your talk. I was pestering your colleagues out here moments before this talk. Do you have any plans to migrate the old Cubic docs to MicroS? Because for someone who's new to transactional systems, it isn't immediately obvious how the classical administration style translates to a transactional one.
Yes, we have a new documentation server. The problem is MicroS doesn't include documentation. If you're in an embedded use case or using it for containers, the man pages are just overhead, which is not needed. So we have a separate documentation server which will just provide all the documentation, but I forgot which one it is. You have to ask me later. I'll search it for you. And I hope the search engines have picked it up. Meanwhile, it's a few weeks old.
There is a question in the chat. How is MicroOS related to ALP?
Basically, the current state of OpenSUSE ALP, which is supposed to be, which is supposed to be the next generation of our SUSE Linux Enterprise, whatever emerges out of that. Basically, OpenSUSE ALP is based on OpenSUSE MicroOS in its current state. There will be more use cases than just the container use cases, but that's the base which it was initially put onto. So a lot of things you can do with OpenSUSE MicroOS, you can also do with OpenSUSE ALP. We even share parts of the documentation currently, but OpenSUSE ALP is more than just OpenSUSE MicroOS. It's just the same foundation currently.
Questions? Going once? Going twice? Thank you very much.